Well, it is a pleasure to meet you, and I have to tell you, what you have done from a lighting and lensing standpoint that translates into stunning, stunning visual emotional bandwidth for episodes 105 and 106 of Masters of the Air is just phenomenal. Out of the 6 episodes so far, 105 and 106, number one, they're directed by Anna and Ryan, whom I have been on their wagon since their very first film at the festival level. So to see them and where they've come from a directorial standpoint as storytellers is fabulous. These two episodes, though, are emotional powerhouses and go about as dark as you think that a story like this would go. The darkness is emotionally palpable. The depth of despair and the true emotional and psychological horrors of war we see played out in these two episodes. And what you have done visually is just outstanding. Outstanding, Jack.
Very, very kind. Yeah, it was a real pleasure working with those two and seeing how they spent, you know, a lot of time with John Olaf, the writer, going through things and really kind of reworking their script to really try and pull the humanity out of it and remove the kind of the show ponying that, you know, when all the young soldiers are showing up and they're all excited and, you know, here they go and they're off to war, and then, yeah, by our episodes, it's like crash.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, everything's starting to split apart, and they kind of, I mean, it's, you know, it's happened before, but I think the depth of the characters is really sunken in at this point as to who they are and what they're going through. And I thought it was an interesting thing that they kind of removed Bucky from it, you know, for most of our episodes as well, because obviously he's such a figure. Mm-hmm. And having the two, the Buck and the Bucky together. But then it was so nice for us to just focus, you know, on Egan and Rosie and know that these characters were incredible, incredible humans on their own right. So, it felt nice not to be so split amongst too many characters. I felt like they really honed that in well.
Well, and that really comes through in the visual grammar of both episodes. But let me break it down. Start with episode 105. Now, I know that the aerial combat is VFX. However, you are lensing what is happening inside the planes, inside the cockpit, in the rear, in the gunnery turret. How challenging is that for you? Navigating, because those, you don't have a lot of room to work here.
Zero room to work. Well, okay, so we started when I'm going to call us block two, when we block two people went into the volume, block one had been in there for a long time and they had been R&Ding it a lot. They didn't have a lot of time in pre to really R&D it, so they were really, you know, doing it as they were shooting it. And then interestingly enough, so we, you know, we were seeing the rushes and we were seeing the progression of how it was evolving, and then by the time our work started in there, I remember the first kind of, because it was literally like, okay, we're out on location, and the next day we're going into the volume station off we go. We didn't have any landed, and they gave us basically a map of the plane and said, these are rigging points, and these are where we've found shots, and they work well, and we can get multiple coverage, and we can hose down like 8 cameras to do that. And we were like, ah, okay, interesting. Okay, well, let's do that then. And then at the end of day one, we were all, Anna and Ryan and I were like, oh, my God. And we decided that although that was very successful way to do it, we felt, A, it was taking such a long time to rig everything, and B, it felt so unintentional. We really wanted to just kind of be more with our actors. And so we basically decided to strip a lot of those rigs away and to choose new positions and just not shoot, just be very specific about the angles we were shooting. We had time to pre-vis a lot of that stuff, so we really did. And of course it changes, you know, when you're on stage. But we had a good amount of time to really think about our sequence, our battle sequence, and know what we wanted from it. And yeah, it was incredibly challenging. I mean, the space inside that plane was minute, and all the actors are, I mean, most of them were much bigger humans than what they were in World War II. So it was a hugely challenging thing. I mean, you know, the actors, getting them in, it was like, okay, everything in place. It's absolutely, there's not going to be anything that can go wrong at this point, because we need to get the actors in, and once they're in there, they can barely move. So I'm talking about specifically in the cockpit. And even getting, like, you know, final checks done, it was so difficult for people to navigate getting into that space. There's many people with, you know, scratches and bruises and, you know, tears in their clothing because crawling in and out of the nose piece. It was really a difficult thing. And lighting wise, I mean, it was like, okay, we're having to make tiny little light mats on magnetic backings that we could stick in and around, and because they were just basically black holes, and they're now painted dark military green on the inside, and they just sucked up the light like nothing. So, you know, lighting and not the cockpit and the nose was fine, but other areas of the plane, it was a real challenge to, you know, get exposure in the dark little corners of it.
Something that I love that you did is, because of the close quarters and the confines within the planes, number one, you capture some great angular physical expressions, very much peripheral vision, like in the cockpits, really beautifully done, so that we start seeing the fear in the eyes, on the faces of our pilots. Normally, you can have an overkill of extreme close-ups. You have extreme close-ups here that are so necessary to put us in the moment, such as, and I know it's a mix of VFX and live action, such as flipping the switches and things like that, and you just see the thumb going to toggle up. Really intense, and it serves to really put us in the mind's eye of each one of these guys. And then with the VFX work behind, the planing behind, where we see these other 13 planes and this firefight happening, it is spectacularly done and really ratchets up the tension. And then we get all this great heartbreak and psychological damage after this Munster mission. You're wiped out just watching this, because we feel every bit. We are there with these guys. We are now so connected with all of them. And thankfully, we go to episode 106. We're on the ground. We're in London. We're at Oxford. But we go emotionally darker yet. Now, How was the differential for you in shooting episode 106? Number one, you have a lot more freedom. You can actually move. You can move the camera. You've got outdoors. But because of the emotional gravitas that we get, and not only are we at Oxford, but we're in Bucky's interrogation, and we're at a Luftstalag 3, and we've got that beautiful drone shot or wide shot of the overview. It reminded me of Gone with the Wind and just the train depot with all the dead on the ground, the way it comes in and zooms in. Beautifully done. So what was your approach for episode 106 for these very specific ground locations?
Yeah, we were all very relieved to get off base, basically, and get out from being in the air. And, you know, Block 1 had their moments where they had gone on, you know, on land and into Europe and stuff as well, but I felt like this was really... We wanted to be classical, but we also wanted to be... I mean, the Crosby and Sandra relationship, you know, that developing, although we're in this, like, grand place of Oxford, which is, you know, just gorgeous, so gorgeous to be at and film in, we were also aware that this was the beginning of a love story.
Mm-hmm.
So we were quite intimate with their coverage, you know, and we were always kind of like, yeah, there's these beautiful big buildings all around them, but actually what their story is in this moment is that they're two people who are, you know, floating in a sea of debris, and they just kind of they found each other, and let's give them some... give them a connection and a reason to, well, to be, you know, they're latching onto each other. So we were like, okay, well, let's be really responsive to that. And like Rosie and the Coombe house and he's going through a lot, but he's trying to deny a lot of that. You know, he's like, I want to go back out there. And so we kind of didn't get as close in those moments with Rosie. We kept some distance from him, so you can still feel like he's still trying to pretend he's got the uniform on, even though he's in there. And, you know, not until the card game towards the end of our time in Coombe House do we feel like, okay, he's really... Well, once he sleeps, I guess, after he's spoken with the doctor in the library, but, yeah, we were kind of aware to keep a distance from him so that we could feel like he was still a bit isolated. And, you know, he wasn't comfortable in that setting to begin with. So, but we, you know, we're just kind of very, you know, it was my first time working with Anna and Ryan, and they have such a strong sense of where they want their characters to be in the scenes and where the scenes will take them, that, you know, we spent time shot listing, we spent time talking about everyone and, you know, just the workings of what it has been so far and what this episode is going to give to the audience. So we're very kind of, you know, we set it up and we strategize it, but then we also can be very carefree and responsive on the day to any changes. You know, never felt like it was like, oh my god, it's not working, we've got to make it work, we'd just be like, okay, well that's not working, but we'll figure out a new plan.
Now, something that I really...
Yeah, I mean, I really, really trust Anna and Ryan in terms of shots and what they need from a scene, and we work it all out together.
I love the metaphor that we get in episode 106 when we're at Oxford and so many of the library scenes, because you have these beautiful, tall, tall, tall windows. And for the most part, you're shooting out with the light behind whoever is sitting in the libraries talking. And it's almost like windows to the world and light at the end of the tunnel. Because, and we feel the darkness of the rest of the room back where the camera would be. And that adds so much depth to the psychological trauma that everybody's going through. And I really love that. Now, what kind of lighting were you using within, you know, within Oxford and also in Bucky's interrogation? And then those lovely intimate moments with Sandra and Crosby and their card game. Because that's such a, that's so sweet. And the lighting feels very soft but very natural. And it's a distinct contrast to what we're seeing in the rest of Oxford or those, the exteriors.
But the fireside, yeah, having a whiskey at the end of the night. Everything was very pretty standard kind of lighting packages, really. Like the interiors that were daylight, that like you were describing, you know, big windows and such. I mean, they were 18K coming in through the windows, softened off. The interior with Egan when he's being interviewed, that was on stage. That was one of the kind of, that was tricky because that was, although it was all, the window treatment that the art department put up was real to what happened. I found it difficult for me. I was like, oh, it looks quite stage like, but that's really what the Germans did. They put paper up on the windows so no one could see in or out. And I was kind of like trying to see if we could break it up and scrape it down and make it a little bit. But Chris Seegers, the production designer, was very adamant, no, it has to be this, and it's clean because these buildings have just been built. It's not, you know, it's not war-torn feeling. It's very, the Germans are very particular. So they, again, they were like, we were on the stage, so they would have been HMIs. I can't remember exactly now what they were. And we, you know, we augmented a little bit inside with like a stereo tube. And then the fire scene with Crosby and Sandra, that was little zip lights on a fire chaser. We didn't have fancy equipment, and we didn't have a lot of lighting going on, actually. And that's, you know, I think that's why Adam Akapor invited me to come along, because he and I kind of share that aesthetic of not fussy lighting and not over lighting and not having a million different sources going on. I mean, a huge challenge for the both of us was night exteriors, because of the wartime policy of, you know, closing all the curtains and no street lights. So that was something that always took a bit of extra, like, okay, how are we going to make this feel real? And, I mean, the production was incredibly strict with, if we have to stick to the reality of what was going on at the time. So no streetlights meant no streetlights, no curtains closed meant curtains closed. You know, it was very hard to ever be allowed to cheat anything lighting-wise.
What kind of lenses were you using to shoot both of these episodes?
There were the Panavision VAs, and we had a ton of them. beautiful.
You know, after shooting both of these episodes, because the complexity of both of them, the emotional complexity, and particularly with episode 105, the technical complexity of shooting in planes, has that honed your skills?
Well, funnily enough, after I finished with block two, I went, Adam had to leave. Block one had gone on much longer than anticipated.
Mm-hmm.
And Adam had to leave for family reasons. And so I ended up going and doing 3 weeks with Carrie. And of course, I'd left all the biggest, baddest they bring one of the, so out on the location of the Thorpe Abbott, we had two planes, one of which had an interior, some part, like the nose and the cockpit, which was filmable. Everything else inside the plane was not filmable, but both of the exterior planes, the location planes, were drivable and movable. And then the grand plan became for Block 1 that one of those planes would be stripped of its wings, cut in half, put on some trucks, and brought to the studio and rebuilt in the studio. So I ended up doing an episode 3, sort of foggy, hard, when the boys are waiting in the hard stands, when it's all fog. We ended up doing that in the stage. I did that with Carrie. And then the African landing. There's a couple of shots that Block 1 did out on location, but the majority of that was in on the stage, with this full-size plane that got rebuilt in the stage. And it was an incredible feat. We were just like, what the hell is this about? This is crazy, because actually once you have a full-size plane in the studio, there's so little room for lighting and blocking. And so I thought, you know, after completing my blocks, and I'd learned so much, and I was like, oh my God, that's great. Yeah, I'm done. I'm finished. And then I was like, oh gosh.
You're not.
Now I've got to go and do those things that everyone's been putting off.
Yeah,
it's a huge thing to move these planes and to get them into the stage and get them rebuilt. And we had gear everywhere at that point in the stages, so they were actually cleared out. It was an incredible collaborative moment getting those things shot.
So now, how has Masters of the Air prepared you cinematographically for future projects? Do you like this episodic? Do you want to go more? Because this really, it plays more like a film than an episodic anything.
Yeah.
How has this prepared you for future projects?
It's funny because obviously the strike was a huge slow down, and also not actually being able to show anyone. And so, you know, I mean, it's taken a long time to come out from when we were over there working. So I did have an inquiry a few weeks ago saying, you know, would Jack be interested in coming and working on this TV show? It won't be anything like Masters of the Year. Is she prepared to you know, not go as grand and as have as many resources? And I was like, oh God, I don't want to be known for that person. I mean, the show is ginormous. It is huge, without a doubt. But I never felt like we treated it like it was huge. You know, I didn't feel like we were over-resourced. You know, we had what we needed, absolutely, but it wasn't like we were being wasteful at any point. We were very rigorous with what we needed, when we needed it, in terms of technical equipment. And I mean, it was a very traditional kind of style of storytelling and filming, so I don't feel like we employed, you know, crazy rigs or anything to get outrageous shots, you know. I'm just about to go and do a TV series with Anna and Ryan. And we also, last year, we shot a $15 million indie together. So, you know, it's fun working with those two. And it was great to, you know, do their indie called Freaky Tales. And you know, we're really struggling with resources for that movie. I certainly don't want to be known as someone who only gets big jobs, although it's always nice to have jobs. But I don't know. I mean, this is all just coming out now, so I'm waiting to see how it all transpires, really.
Well, one of your greatest gifts is you can do something as powerful as the aerial aspects and at the same time give us the internalized beauty and emotionality of individuals. And that's where I think that you paired with Anna and Ryan, I think that's a wonderful collaboration because they truly are so much about the humanity, the individuality, the emotionality, and the human connection in every story they tell. This is, I mean, your work on these two episodes, the three of you, just outstanding, Jack, outstanding. I've watched both of them, both episodes twice already, but...
There are only nine. The last block, it was meant to be 10, mm-hmm. And then Apple were like, we need to condense it, and funnily enough, they actually ended up shooting enough, the two episodes, that they decided in the edit to stick with their, keep it to nine, and nine's an epic episode, it's fantastic.
I am chomping at the bit. This is my guilty pleasure series of 2024. I can tell you that right now. It's phenomenal. Jack, thank you so, so much. This has been wonderful.
It's awesome.
And I hope I get to speak with you again in the future.
Well, yeah, look out for Freaky Tales.
Definitely we'll be on the lookout for Freaky Tales. Jack, thank you.
Pleasure. Take care. Thank you.
Bye-bye.